Good morning and welcome to Sunday Tech for March 8th, 2026. I'm your host, Blois Olson. This week we are focused on another big issue facing Minnesota's economy as part of this series. This week it's workforce. We were fortunate enough through Fluence Advisory to work with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and understand their workforce summit. And so we have two featured segments this week. The first is with Sean O'Neill. Sean is the Senior Director of Economic Development and Research at the Minnesota Chamber. He walks through stats and migration patterns that are relative to Minnesota's workforce. The reality is we've been losing people to Wisconsin and North Dakota. We are not getting as many college students, although that is improving. And we have to have the migration and the growth in our workforce to Minnesota in order for our economy to sustain itself. It's just a reality of these times. We can joke about climate, but there's many other factors. And to make sure that the businesses have the workers, we have to work with higher ed. And so the second segment this week is the role of higher ed in attracting students that are the future workforce. We'll have a take at the end, of course, and it was, again, another week at the legislature. But as we think about the high school hockey tournament this weekend and some of the Minnesota things, I hope you enjoy the weather today and enjoy Sunday Take this week.
Good morning and welcome back to Sunday Take. This first segment this week is from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce Workforce Summit. And it's Sean O'Neill, the Senior Director of Economic Development and Research, talking about labor force migration patterns here in Minnesota, the importance of us attracting and retaining young workers in Minnesota. Here's Sean O'Neill.
Years. So our 2026 Business Benchmarks report was really trying to kind of distill and summarize some of these key patterns that we see throughout all these exercises where we're kind of ranking Minnesota against other states, seeing how our state is performing. And a main takeaway from the report is that Minnesota still ranks in the top 5 to 10 states in this really long list of metrics that look at the overall health and quality of the economy. These are strengths that have really developed over decades here, and we can see it in terms of things like labor force participation, different metrics of innovation, our diverse industry base, we have high business survival rates, you know, really a long list of things that every year we're among the top states in. But what's equally clear in the data is that our economic growth has been decelerating for some time. And so our economy is not growing as fast as it used to, and we've also been growing more slowly than other states in recent years. So when we look at the major metrics of economic growth, things like GDP per capita, which is, you know, maybe one of the most important long-term indicators of our overall kind of economic prosperity in the state, the rate of our labor force growth, population growth, these things were just not growing very fast. And we've been in the bottom 10 to 15 states in some of these important metrics. Right, so we can see this both in terms of kind of the productivity side of our economy, the output per person, but also in the growth in our workforce. And so our labor force growth has been growing 40th fastest in the first half of this decade at 0.2% annually. Now that hasn't been a straight line. We had a big dip around the pandemic where a lot of people left the workforce, early retirements, people dropping off for other reasons. And then we've kind of been in recovery mode since then. But the annual average over that time span has been essentially flat labor force growth. And this has been exacerbated by some challenges around migration, more people leaving the state than moving to Minnesota. So we've ranked 41st in net domestic migration in the first half of the decade. Right. And you know, I think that has left us in this familiar place that we've been in for a while now of having some shortages in availability of our workforce in the state. If you go back to around 2017 onward, we've had more job openings than job seekers outside of that downturn around the pandemic, right? So we've kind of structurally been running about 2 job openings for every job seeker. And that creates challenges for businesses to have enough people as they're trying to expand, hire, grow here in the state. You can kind of think about this as like excess economic activity that we're leaving on the table, right? If our labor demand and supply could come into closer equilibrium, then we would just have a lot more economic activity taking place that would help grow the economy here. Now, of course, there's questions about labor demand in the future. You know, what's the role of AI and, you know, how many people we're going to need in the workforce, other automation technologies. But as we look at our demographic outlook, our population outlook going through like the middle part of the century, that working age population in Minnesota is not expected to change very much. So we're expected to have a roughly the same number of people between the ages of 16 to 64 in our state in 10, 20, 30 years as we have today. And that directly impacts then our labor force outlook. So when we project out how fast our labor force is expected to grow in that same time span, you know, it looks like we're gonna be around that 0.2% annual growth for the foreseeable future. So likely that's just not enough people to fully kind of meet the needs and capacity of the economy here. So what does this mean? I think that there's a couple, you know, main implications. One is that given this outlook, more than ever, it's, you know, critical to think about the productivity side of our economy, right? How do we help businesses invest, you know, make investments in technology, equipment, to innovate, but then also in terms of the human capital of our workforce, right? Making sure that our workforce has the right education and skill levels, that we're investing in workforce training, deploying technology and equipment to our workforce in the right ways, to create wide pathways for people to get into these highly productive, high earning potential kinds of jobs, right? All of that, those strategies that we do will be, you know, of kind of top priority, top importance for having a healthy growing economy into the future. But the other side of the equation is that though we can't, you know, reverse the long-term demographic outlook, there are things that we can do to improve upon our baseline projection, right? And we can do that in kind of two essential ways. One, by helping increase labor force participation, so reducing barriers to employment, helping people come off the economic sidelines, having an inclusive workforce, and then by doing better around net migration, attracting more people into the state. Let me just zero in on that a little bit more, because when we think about, well, where does our labor force growth come from in the first place? You know, if our workforce grows, what are the sources of that growth? And really, there's only three ways to grow the workforce. One is through natural population growth, and that's really what's kind of been slowing growth in the state's population, is birth rates have been declining over time. And so really, the other two avenues there are labor force participation of our existing population here, and net migration. And there's both kind of an international and domestic component to that. So let's look at some data around these trend lines. And, you know, there's actually some good news on the workforce participation front. One is that the participation rates for our working age population have been pretty steady over the past decade or so, staying around 80%. But then if you look at that orange line, that's our population of color in Minnesota, and workforce participation rates increased by 12 percentage points from, let's see, what was it, 2011 to 2024. And that's really just a remarkable trend line to see, probably an undertold story in Minnesota that we've had a lot of progress in increasing participation for a broader set of our population. And so, you know, what does this mean in real terms? Well, increasing that inclusion in the workforce has led to growth of over 100,000 people in the workforce, right? So without that improvement, we'd have 107,000 fewer people in the workforce today. So really a meaningful difference. And we see a similar trend line if we look at adults with a disability. So it's still you know, large gap here relative to the total population, but the trend line has been improving. There's been an 11 percentage point improvement since 2012, and an especially big jump in the first part of this decade. As we looked at some of the kind of research around this a little bit more, we saw some of the drivers of that were changes in remote and hybrid work, so kind of more job opportunities opening up for people with various physical abilities, and increases in like automation technologies, right? So as companies invests in automation. It just allows people with a wider range of physical abilities to perform the same tasks. So here we can see that like investments in productivity can actually go hand in hand with growth in the workforce and more inclusion. So that's some of the good news. It's also good news that we just have high labor force participation compared to other states, but that's also part of the challenge for Minnesota, that there might be some kind of natural ceiling that we hit in how many people we can pull into the workforce. Because we already rank fourth in the country for overall labor force participation. And so if you compare Minnesota to states toward the bottom, states like Mississippi or West Virginia, you know, we just have a much larger share of our population that's already engaged in the workforce. So it's likely that even improving or kind of reinforcing this strength is not likely to be sufficient to kind of meet the needs of our workforce and our economy going forward. So that leaves migration as kind of that other lever, right? And the story here is that if you go back the past 25 years, international migration to Minnesota has been a net positive. You know, we've been the beneficiary of attracting people from all around the world who come here to work and fill critical roles in all sorts of industries, from high tech to manufacturing, healthcare, agriculture, you know, these really important industries in the state, a lot of them starting innovative businesses, right? So this has kind of been helping sustain growth in the state. But that orange bar is the net domestic migration side of the equation. And here we've had more challenges. We've had negative net domestic migration in 20 of the past 25 years, right? So these gains or losses can stack up over time and impact growth in the workforce. Now you can see at the in 2025, we had positive in-migration, both on the international and domestic side. So I'm gonna get into that more in just a little bit, and you know, we'll think about what might be behind that improvement. But here, I want to start kind of focusing in on this question around domestic migration. You know, can we peel back the layers some and better understand, you know, what's driving some of these migration outcomes? What do we know, or what is still left unanswered? And so I'm going to go through kind of four key questions here. And the first is asking the question, is Minnesota losing too many people to other states? Or are we not gaining enough people? Are we not attracting enough people to Minnesota? Now, when we look at the data here, the blue line is total in-migration. That orange bars are total out-migration. And what's been a consistent pattern going even prior to 2019 is that in a normal year, Minnesota attracts about 100,000 people into the state from other states, and we lose a little bit more than that. Now, that gap widened in those years around the pandemic, but a typical year is about that, attracting 100,000 in, losing a little bit more. Now, what that doesn't tell us is, you know, which part of that equation is a little bit off. You know, do we have above average rates of people that are leaving the state, or do we have below average attraction rates into Minnesota? You know, so when we calculate the rate and we compare it to other states, you know, the data suggests that we have more of an attraction problem than a retention problem. Our retention rate's actually pretty solid. We have the 14th lowest out-migration rate. So the number of people leaving Minnesota relative to the size of our population isn't that high. But we're near the bottom of the country in attracting population here. Now, what matters at the end of the day is that net number, right? That's what impacts our workforce growth, size of our population. But it can be helpful to understand this because it might create a little bit more focus around what we would do about it. Just in the same way that a business might want to know how they're doing with customer retention versus bringing in new customers. You might think differently about the strategies to address one issue or the other. So let's go a level deeper here and look at some of the geographic patterns around this. You know, where is Minnesota doing well in attracting people from, and where are we losing people to? And here the data tells kind of an interesting and I think compelling story. When we look at net attraction with other states, hopefully you can read that, it's a little small, but really Illinois is the big story and the state that we attract a lot of people from on net. It's the only state where we have significant net positive numbers in migration. The other side where we have net losses with is our neighboring states to the east and west, so North and South Dakota, Wisconsin, and then large Sunbelt states, states like Florida, Texas, let's see who else is on there, North Carolina, South Carolina, Utah, right? So some of those large Sunbelt states and neighboring states really are where we've had the biggest net losses with. So again, we can think about that in terms of kind of strategies to address this. And the regional component, I think, becomes even more important when we look at just total flows, number of people moving in and out. So this is now not the net number, it's just total migration to and from the state. And you can see that Wisconsin and North Dakota play a really big role here. There's just a lot more people moving in and out with those states than anywhere else. So I think the implications, there's a couple implications here. One, we might be able to actually do something about this more than our competition with other parts of the country, right? Because here, things like weather and climate aren't likely to play a factor. You know, people aren't moving to North Dakota for the sunny beaches. And so, you know, I think that is, there might be more factors kind of within the control of what we do at the local and state level here. And the second is that because the total volume of migration flows is larger, even a small percentage improvement can make a difference in our total outcomes. So, thinking there in terms of strategies for the future is maybe a good.
That's Sean O'Neill. He is Senior Director of the Economy at the Minnesota Chamber. And that was his presentation at the Workforce Summit. And as you can hear at the end, it's a big question that I'll address in the take, which is, what can we do about regional migration in the Midwest? If we're losing people to Wisconsin and North Dakota, it's not because of the weather. It's either because of the jobs, the economy, or something else. The next panel, which we'll introduce after the break, is three higher ed leaders. Rebecca Cunningham from the University of Minnesota, Rob Vischer from the University of St. Thomas, and Scott Olson from Minnesota State System. Their panel was moderated by Doug Loon at this week's Workforce Summit. And one of the things that they talk about is, how do we attract and keep our students here? Because as you'll hear in the take, I think that's one of the biggest things we can do for our workforce. When we come back, that panel from the Minnesota Chamber Workforce Summit with Doug Loon and higher ed leaders. I'm Blaise Olson. This is News Talk 830 WCCO.
Welcome back to Sunday Take. The final segment here before we get to the take is the role of higher ed in retaining employees and workforce. It's from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce Workforce Summit. It includes Chancellor Scott Olson of Minnesota State, President Rob Vischer at the University of St. Thomas, Rebecca Cunningham, the president of the University of Minnesota. It's a moderated conversation by Doug Loon, the president and CEO of the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Here's that panel.
And then once we know, once they come to the University of Minnesota, 70% of them stay in the state. So we certainly are training your future workforce. You know, some high spots, we have to work harder at recruitment than we used to in our grandmother's generation. We have to do more with marketing, more with national strategy, more with differentiating ourselves from other universities. Students, 18-year-olds, have a lot of choices. They have a lot of bright, shiny, sparkly choices in all of the states around. And it's important that they continue to see us as the key place where we can make a difference for them for their life. So I do have some good news that despite that demographic shift, enrollment is up at all five of our campuses. We have five campuses across the state. At each one of those, enrollment is up this year. Some places, for example, our Rochester campus, which is really working on matching workforce needs around the state, focusing just on healthcare, is up 80% in enrollment. So we do continue to be a place of choice for students. With that recruitment, you're focused on workforce. We are also focused as part of our strategic plan that we've just rolled out, that Elevate Extraordinary for the next 5 years, in how we're working with business and with partnerships to look at matching what the needs of the state are. So for example, in the last 5 years, we know there's a need in the marketplace for more engineers. Over the past 5 years, we've increased that engineering footprint by 20%. We've had curriculum changes in our Carlson School of Business to help match some of the supply chain operations needs coming out. So we are working and need to continue to be in dialogue with business partners on what that future looks like for the state. But we also know we're gonna have to work hard towards that goal. Again, 70% of those students do stay in the state of Minnesota. And so our job is to get them to be here. We do, and we'll talk in a minute, we draw obviously not only from the state of Minnesota, but we are your talent magnet also for bringing students in out of state. And we do that quite successfully from all 50 states. We bring in students. And as we all know, once you come to the Twin Cities, you never really leave. And if you do leave or you leave Minnesota, you don't really leave for that long. So having us get them here is that certainly first part of that strategy. But with that, we're having to do things differently now. And I'm sure my peers will say the same.
President Fisher, what are the trends at St. Thomas?
Sure. So compared to the U of M, we're the new kids on the block. We've only been around 141 years. So we are constantly trying to adapt and innovate to meet the needs of the world as they exist today. As President Cunningham mentioned, we are not making as many 18-year-olds as we used to. And that's not going to change anytime in the future. As birth rates decline, that's the reality that we face, especially in the upper Midwest. And so the competition for undergrad students is a lot more intense than it's ever been. So a St. Thomas applicant on average will apply to 8 colleges, right? So that's average. Some are applying to 12, 13, 14. You have to focus on one, making sure folks understand what a strong economic ROI you present, which can be hard. There's a perception that colleges get more and more and more expensive. Sticker price does. In reality, per student net tuition is pretty stagnant across the board, and when you crunch the numbers, we're still a really good deal. We have to get that message out, but it's not just about economic ROI, it's about experience. Students want big, bold, bright. They want the sizzle. One of the best descriptions I've heard of the higher ed market, it's we are entering a winner takes most market. And so they're drawn to bigger, more intense experience. A year ago, we welcomed our largest undergrad entering class in our history. This year, again, applications are up significantly. We're seeing the yield softer, especially for out-of-state students, and the softening really picked up during January and February. So we are concerned about being on the top of the global news cycle for weeks on end for reasons that aren't reassuring to parents of 18-year-olds looking for colleges. So we're dealing with that in the short term. But long term, ROI, transformative experience, and especially as AI, and I know we'll get into that, as AI picks up the pace of automating cognitive tasks, you have to do more. There has to be some focus on forming men and women for lifelong flourishing, not just teaching them a set of cognitive tasks. And so we're doing that. We can get more into that later.
Chancellor.
Our enrollment, too, has been up for each of the last 6 semesters after a decade of challenge. And in some cases, up double digits. The growth more so in our technical colleges. And I don't know if that's a function of Gen Z having seen their parents struggle with the Great Recession or the effects of COVID, and they're more practically minded and want to go be a welder or a plumber or an electrician. I'm not really sure. We don't have survey data on that. In our case, what might be a little different than these fine universities represented here is amongst our colleges, it's usually not somebody trying to decide whether they're going to go to Hennepin Technical College or go to St. Thomas or the U of M Twin Cities. It's really, do I go to Hennepin Technical College or do I not go to college at all? So for our colleges, our community colleges, technical colleges, it might be that's the choice. Do I go or don't I go? And then that becomes an affordability message of here's why you want to go.
For the University of Minnesota, I'm curious, so we can come back to you, Dr. Cunningham, about, as you talked about the ability for you guys to attract and retain, you said 70%, mm-hmm. and we've seen an increase, Sean showed a slide earlier, we've seen that increase of enrollments of 4-year universities. Where are those attractants coming from? Are they coming from the state? Are they coming from other states? Are there specific programs that have been attracting those numbers and retaining those students?
Yeah. So we do attract students from states, from all 50 states. We have we are at University of Minnesota, and so we do have about 65% of our students are from Minnesota. That does mean we have about 35% of our students that we attract either internationally, and we can talk about that in a minute, or from other states. That provides both a giant talent pipeline. We have 70,000 students. So for those of you that like math, 35% of 70,000 is we're bringing in a lot of new talent every year to the state of Minnesota to give them that Minnesota experience. And we're committed to that both for the experience it gives those students and for having some demographic inflow in that area to the state, but also because it's a good experience for our students who at a research intensive university then get to interact with students from all over the country and the globe so that they get that life experience as well, which helps them set up well next in many ways. So where do we see the growth areas? It's mixed. We certainly see, in our Rochester campus, like I said, and other places, there is an uptick around, there's a desperate need for health and healthcare workforce. Mm-hmm. There's certainly increased interest in fields like engineering and and information sciences. In terms of where we draw those students from, it is definitely global. We have certainly students from Wisconsin, you might realize, come here. That's definitely true. But we also have a giant pools of students that come from Illinois, California, Texas, and Iowa, for example. And so those are places where we're bringing in influxes of students. Focused on what we have to offer here. And some of the things that attract those students in specifically, for a research intensive university, if you think about your top 10, your Big Ten football, most of them don't sit in a big city, mm-hmm. right? And this is really about the Twin Cities campus. A lot of our students on our other campuses, a higher percent of those are from Minnesota. But though we sit in this giant ecosystem, which gives students the opportunity for a lot more engagement with the business and community than they would get, and more experiences than they would get in other places. In a University of Michigan or in a Penn State in a small town. So what we offer students and what we see students coming for in some ways is that ability to engage across corporate partners. And it's one of the things that we're also a differentiator for the University of Minnesota that we're really good at is right now 65 or 75% of our students get a hands-on experiential learning, real-world experience during their University of Minnesota education. And that's back to something you said, it's no longer good enough to just get students a number of credits and a degree. You folks all know that when you're hiring, students need more than that coming out. They have to have had an internship. They have to have worked somewhere in the real world for you to be super interested in hiring them, often two or three places. And this is something the University of Minnesota has been really good at, and we are focused in our strategic plan on even excelling more at, and that's what will be help us pull students who want that real world experience so they get not just a degree, but they graduate with that experience that makes them competitive in the marketplace.
Yeah, we talked about skills training earlier, and we're going to come back to that, but I want to stay on global students and the number of enrollments. We had panelists from Fredrickson earlier, and they talked about the international students being at 15,000 here in Minnesota, coming from around the globe. So, President Fisher, as you think about global, how does that impact your university? And we'll come to you next, Scott.
Yeah, it's a huge part of our mission as a Catholic university to welcome the world to campus, and it's a part of our business model to welcome the world to campus in ways we contribute to the Twin Cities. So right now at St. Thomas, there are students from 104 different countries. But I don't have to tell you, it's a difficult environment right now. This past fall, we welcomed, I believe, 140 or so first-year students from foreign countries. Just in the space of this last year, 24 or 25 of those students would not be able to enroll because the list of banned countries is growing, right? Yeah. So one of the things to focus is how important our international students have been for Minnesota? And I could give you so many different examples to get out of the headlines and beyond the data, but to the real stories. I was just at an alumni event and a woman came up to talk to me who didn't know anything about Minnesota, but got a scholarship from St. Thomas, so came here, loved it, raised a family here, has been here for more than 30 years as a key management position of one of our largest employers, contributing to her neighborhood, to her city. Last year, those of you who went to St. Thomas, you know, Tommy of the Year Award is a big deal for a graduating senior. Last year's Tommy of the Year was a student from Vietnam who now works at Anderson, loves Minnesota, wants to stay here. Some of the messages coming from the federal government have not always been particularly welcoming to international students in this climate, and recognizing that we're in a global market competing for talent at the student level as well. I just ran into a student of ours from Ghana who's trying to get his friends from home to come to St. Thomas because he's loved it and he loves the Twin Cities and life in Minnesota, and because of what they've been reading and the fear, and they're going to Australia. Right, so this is a problem. Whatever, wherever you are on the political spectrum, if you care about workforce development, yeah, we have to be continually sending the message that international students, international talent, those with potential who want to contribute to the common good, they are welcome here, they will be celebrated here, and they will flourish here. And we're trying to do that, and we are still having some success, but it's a rougher environment than it has been in past years, for sure.
Let's switch to domestic migration, moving around states. You know, Minnesota state system, you lean into this. You attract from around the kind of five-state area plus Minnesota. Talk to us about how do you lean into that to make sure you're growing your campuses and your student population.
Well, like the University of Minnesota, overwhelmingly our students come from and overwhelmingly stay in Minnesota. If you think about the community colleges and the technical colleges that are in your communities, they generally are students who come from a nearby radius. They're probably living at home, they're commuting to study there, and then only after they graduate do they go into their profession. But there have been some public policy moves on the part of neighboring states that have affected our ability to attract and...
A bit on the more technical side, is that...?
On all sides. Okay. So. To name a few, so I once upon a time I worked at Winona State University, and UW-Eau Claire and UW-La Crosse used to have enrollment caps on their institution. You could only enroll so many students, and that created then a demand for Minnesota institutions that were perceived of sort of as comparable, you know, teachers' colleges, that kind of thing. Well, as part of its public policy to address Wisconsin lack of funding for higher ed, they allowed Eau Claire, La Crosse, probably others, to lift those caps. And then that then had an effect of students who, Wisconsin students, who otherwise might have in-migrated to Minnesota, studied here, stayed here, prospered here, to in fact kind of stay put. North Dakota, because of its oil boom, was financing all kinds of scholarships to attract in-migration of brain gain strategies to get students to come into North Dakota. And that was affecting a lot of our institutions that were along the Dakota border, mm-hmm, who were finding that very appealing. But, I mean, a part of our value proposition is we're sort of everywhere in the state, you know, 33 campuses that are kind of spread out, and the only place that we're not is in the Arrowhead. You know, other than that, we're kind of everywhere, and you all know this because we're in your community too. And we're like a mile here from Hennepin Tech. We're 2 miles from North Hennepin. So that's the kind of place we are. And that's part of our value proposition. So where they probably more so have to find people to come and be at their institution, I would think, as you just described, we're kind of there in that community, and people can live at home, stay at home, study there. That's sort of where we position ourselves.
Well, that's what I love about this conversation, is because your strategies are different, because your approach is different. Rebecca, you have something to add?
Yeah, I want to follow on that in a couple ways. One, it's always such a pleasure to be on stage with my colleagues here, but Also, just to emphasize that we're three different universities that are completely complementary in our ecosystem and completely all needed in different ways to make the state future workforce happen. And so I think there's this, there gets to be a narrative sometimes that, you know, that there's competition in some ways, but really the students and the focus that, you know, MinState has are desperately needed and really important. Absolutely. And also so are the ones in the private universities and in the university. And in a lot of ways, we feed off of each other. And I think that's important for people to know. So a student who might start at home a mile from one of your campuses often will take a 2+2 pathway and do 2 years there and then come onto one of our five campuses. And we are all across the state in every 87 counties too. I'm just saying what they say. But that's okay. But only five campuses. But in any case, but
only five.
Only five campuses. But that, I just want people to understand how important that complementarity, because there's no wrong path to higher education. And wherever people enter, then they find their path and certainly sometimes, you know, wind up in a technical school when they start another place as well. And then I just can't help but add on into the international conversation. So we have about 7.5% of our students come globally, which is 10,000 students about. So we're bringing 10,000 students every year into Minnesota. And for all to echo all of the things my colleague said, these are, it's incredibly, we're attracting global talent and it is competitive. They could go to Australia or London or France. They could go to lots of places and they're choosing to come here. And then I hear fabulous stories from our alumni who were international students who are here and working and have amazing productive lives because they took a chance on a university that they knew a little bit about that was in a land far away. And that's really important.
Go ahead. The demographics will tell you that Minnesota, we're here to talk about workforce, Minnesota will not meet its workforce needs unless two things happen. One that we're already talking about, which is net in-migration, right? Which includes being very welcoming to international students who then might want to stay and work and prosper here. And for us to be, us all, to be more broadly inclusive of the young people who are already here in Minnesota and find ways to be equitable and be inclusive. Unless we can all figure out a way to do that, Minnesota's not going to have the workforce that it needs for the future. We've all got to work together to do that.
So let's stay on this theme of partnerships.
Okay.
So you talked a bit about how you have this cohesive strategy that the university systems can work together.
For sure.
But it's also a strategy around partnerships with business. To think about what are the needs in the community or the needs of the state as far as career paths are concerned. So give us a few, let's start with you, Chancellor, again, about what are those, some of the strategies that have happened on the ground at the Minnesota State University system in partnership with businesses as a model for that conversation to occur?
Well, I had the honor, you know, of serving on a Chamber of Commerce board.
Gosh, that's a good answer.
I'll drop two names that some of you might know. I started on that board with Della Schmidt, who's now at Greater Mankato Growth, and then was on the search committee that hired Christy Ransom to come in. And that was not unique. Lots of our presidents serve on their local Chamber of Commerce boards to ensure that those things are tightly woven together. We have a lot of programs that are located at work sites. A recent addition that I would mention is an aircraft maintenance program that is actually located. Anybody from St. Cloud here? Okay, well, it's located at the St. Cloud Airport. So we do the program at the St. Cloud Airport on airplane mechanics. And we have some of our peace officer training programs are mobile programs that go around the state to the communities where people need to have the skills training to be a peace officer. So that's one way to do it, is to actually go where the workplace is and do some work there. Work with our local chambers to make sure we're listening. A last thing, for those of you who, you know, kind of represent business and industry here, is serve on an industry advisory board on one of our campuses. They are looking for folks to come in and say, this is what the industry needs from you. And my pledge to you is we will listen to what you are telling us.
You're listening to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. I'm your host, Blois Olson. That was the role of higher education in retaining and attracting students to Minnesota. A panel from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce Workforce Summit that included Chancellor Scott Olson of Minnesota State, President Rob Vischer of the University of St. Thomas, and Rebecca Cunningham, the President of the University of Minnesota. The conversation was moderated by Doug Loon, the President and CEO of the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. This is just the latest episode of Sunday Take, where we're focused on the big issues of the state. When we come back, this week's take, I'm Blaise Olson, News Talk 830 WCCO. This week's take is about workforce. Shocking, I know. You know, with two students in college that both chose to go out of state, and many conversations with my peers, including Jason Narusha here at the station, my business partner, it's important that we understand why kids don't want to stay in Minnesota for college. And the reason is because the harder it is to get them back. I know that there's Minnesota way of finding your way back home, and that's valuable. But we have to keep that. We have to keep that with quality jobs here, quality of life. And that's what we need to lean in on. And so we've talked about mining, we've talked about farming, and we continue to talk about these big issues, but there's no bigger issue than making sure we have the workers of the future. They will pay the taxes. They will have the children that support our schools. They will have the jobs that support our roads and our infrastructure. We've got to be more competitive as a state. Past week, I was at the Greater MSP annual meeting where you heard us talk about more headwinds. Pivot Bio announced they'll move their headquarters here. That's 50 jobs in a $2 billion company, and we hope it takes off. Ecolab said it was investing. We need to retain and attract workers here, and in order to do that, we need to start with higher ed. We need to make sure our higher ed is modernized, innovative, and cost-effective. Now, enrollment has increased over the last few years. We have to focus on graduation rates and make sure those skills match the jobs of the future. There's plenty of fear with AI and the demographic shift. But if we don't keep an eye on it and have a strategy for the future, we're going to fall further behind in our competitiveness. I'll be with Vanita. I think she's back. It's 6:20 every day. If you want to check all these panels, they're available at Fluence Forum. The full audio is there. As always, you can check out our newsletters at thedailyagenda.com. Until next week, that's The Take.